Martyr Muhammad Beheshti once said, "Learn Arabic, it's the language of Quran, and learn Farsi, as it's the language of the revolution."
Abu Mahdi meets with the army commanders on a daily basis. Among them are generals who might once have been trying to hunt him down under Saddam Hussein. But now the Iraqi dictator and his Ba'ath party are gone. Nowadays, Hadi Amiri and Abu Mahdi are not mere military commanders. They're the commanders of the hearts of the people living in the region.
I joined the Dawah Party in 1970. The Iraqi regime began to arrest Iraqi faithful clerics and the youth in 1973. Mr. Satt was the founder of the party. He wanted to establish a party along with a seminary to do works among people, cultural activities, not armed activities. All my comrades in the Dawah Party were arrested. Five senior Dawah figures were executed in 1975. It was a major crackdown until 1980, when Sadr himself was finally executed. I and almost all of my friends used to frequently go to the neighborhoods and mosques back then. 95% of them in the Dawah Party were killed. I don't know how, but I and some of my friends managed to escape. We went to Kuwait and established the same party there and set up a fighting group. That's where we gradually started our armed activities. We were very active back then. The government of Kuwait was against us, against the people of Iraq, the Shias of Iraq and Saddam Hussein. I got married in Kuwait and received a death sentence there as well. I went to Iran in 1984. I fled Kuwait and after crossing several countries, arrived in Tehran 3 or 4 months later.
Maybe these are the complexities of the war in Iraq that have made it unique and prolonged. When things go fine on the front line, the U.S. and its media start a propaganda war, saying the areas retaken from Daesh would see worse days as soon as the PMU forces arrive. If foreign sedition failed, it would be sowing discord inside that exposes the resistance front to dangers. The resistance forces are braced for the most critical operations. There are lots of difficulties in the war, but the U.S. direct and indirect interference in the war is the worst. The U.S. has stipulated that none of the PMU forces, which include different sects and ethnic groups in Iraq, is allowed to enter Fallujah. This comes as Iraq has its own official army, legitimate government, and administrative mechanism, but Washington doesn't want that.
What had you done that you were condemned to death in Kuwait?
Fighting activities, the same as Mustafa Badreddin was involved in. We were in the same group. He was a close friend of mine and was martyred recently. He was sent to jail for 7 years, but I managed to flee. After he was freed, we joined each other. We immediately joined the forces that were later renamed the Badr Brigades. After Ismail Daghayeri came in, the Badr organization was set up. He was with us for 1 year and 10 months. He founded the organization that later turned into the brigades. He was our first martyr in Operation Karbala 5.
Abu Mahdi does not lead the operation from miles away. His war room is located in the armored vehicle near the front line. The children of the martyrs and his former comrades in arms constitute most of Abu Mahdi's bodyguards. These are young people who have devoted all their energy to protect Abu Mahdi's life. They shield Mohandas with their bodies from the deadly bullets of the snipers. Moreover, there are hundreds of suicide cars wandering around. If one of them makes its way to Abu Mahdi, his life will be in grave danger.
of Iran's Islamic Revolution said a meaningful thing after the imposed Iraqi war on Iran. He said the Badr Brigades would play a key role in Iraq's future. He said the sentence in 1990. That was a strange comment at that time. We wrote the sentence on a wall in our military base, but we asked ourselves, what role could the brigades play? The war was over, Saddam Hussein was in Iraq, and we were displaced. But now we see the role the Badr Brigades is playing. The most important commanders of the PMU are from the Badr Brigades. We set up the organization inside Iraq and began operations in the country. We were stationed in Talhor, then went to other provinces and made contacts with other fighters inside Iraq. Then we began different operations against the regime. Examples are targeting the presidential palace, targeting Saddam Hussein's son Uday. We undertook such operations.
Did you mount operations against the MKO in Iraq?
Yes, we did. The most important operation was in Badian Habib, after the martyrdom of Sayyid Shirazi. The MKO said 13 of their forces were killed. A complete building was exploded. Saddam Hussein was emboldened by U.S. support. Americans came to the conclusion that killing Saddam Hussein would serve their interests. They didn't free Iraq. See what they did in Iraq. They caused misery. Except for atomic bombs, they used every kind of weapons against the people of Iraq. We experienced lots of difficulties during more than a decade of sanctions against Iraq. The U.S. is our main enemy.
There could be partial victories against Takfiris using military operations and well-thought-out offensives. But to annihilate Takfiris, there is no way but a mutual engagement between all the forces. Iraq's society is now moderate, but Shia and Sunni tribes and nomads still play a key role in the mobilization of people. This session is held upon Nomad Sheikh's request. They want to thank resistance fighters.
We came to these areas to defeat Daesh and free people from these Takfiri and terrorist ideas that have flourished with oil money. Saudi Arabia has lots of oil reserves. It sells 10 million barrels of oil per day, and the result has been the Taliban, Al-Qaeda, Al-Zarqawi, and now Daesh. These are all two sides of the same coin. It's unfortunate that these factories and gardens got destroyed like that. They cannot be reconstructed, even in a long time. We hope to succeed with the help of you, the people of this area. We normally don't stay for long in any area we enter, maximum 2 or 3 weeks. We hope it would take less than 3 weeks. We are guests here. We only plan to liberate the area, and then we return. Your wives and families matter to us, just like ours. Your money and your houses will remain safe. We need your cooperation. The U.S. plans to control the region by fanning the flames of tensions. I don't believe in conspiracy theories, but I feel the U.S. had a leading role in the creation of the Taliban and Al-Qaeda, and that is a fact. Now the U.S. is giving Al-Qaeda forces guidelines rather than trying to eliminate them. The things that happened in Syria, Egypt, Tunisia, Libya, and now in Iraq are being used by the U.S. Washington benefits from these ideas and groups. The U.S. is a great country, but it's a devil.
The PMU achieved more than expected. They retook large swaths of land from Daesh in the oil-rich provinces of Diyala and Salahuddin. Lots of refineries are also located in these two. The offensives dealt major blows to the Takfiris and made them fragile more than before.
What happened when you became the commander of the PMU in Iraq?
I don't know. It just happened. I worked and suddenly found out that had happened. The younger generation has to work. I am old. This is the convoy of youth. I am retired, but I am here.
How long have you been fighting?
If you mean armed fighting, I should say since 1983, which is 33 years, I think. If you mean generally since 1970, which means 46 years.
My wishes for Abu Mahdi are full of fear and hope. I wish he would stay alive and fresh. But what deserves a fighter who has fought for over 30 years and has lost his friends one by one, more than martyrdom? Now I understand why Abu Mahdi doesn't reject any fighter's request for taking a photo with him. He takes selfies with everyone. He knows that death is just around the corner, either for him or the person standing next to him in the photo. It's been years that he is laughing at death. He takes photos with everyone and smiles at them.
Before the advent of Daesh, hundreds of people were being killed or injured each day, including me. In Karbala, on the way to Karbala, it's been happening for years. Things started in 2004 until 2014. They changed their name to Daesh in 2014 and reached Baghdad. Abu Bakr al-Baghdadi and others said they would head to Najaf and Karbala soon. They cursed Shias, Najaf, and Karbala until the time that the Marja issued a fatwa. Of course, we had begun the job before the fatwa. We created resistance organizations in 2003.
Fallujah was the most important city that fell to Daesh in winter 2014. There has been coordination between the Air Force, the police, the Army, the Task Force, and the PMU. This shows the public determination to wipe Daesh off Iraq.
The question now is why the PMU was created. Iraq has an army. Army soldiers could have gone to fight.
Take the case of Iraq's war against Iran. The army fought, but so did the people. They answered Imam's call and defended the revolution and the country's borders. They defended Islam. Why? Because they saw the scale of the invasion going beyond the capacity of the army. The West knew that we are Shias. We had the fatwa as well. They knew that without the help of the Islamic Revolution of Iran and without Iran leaders' fatwa, there couldn't have been any mobilization forces. The main idea is the religious and national side of the story. We want to defend our honor and our soil. We're confronting a huge invasion and a takfiri group called Daesh. We created the forces. It's true that we're Shias, but Sunnis joined us very soon. Based on the PMU charter, Sunnis should constitute 30% of all our forces. And they have reached that number, as we have 20,000 Sunni fighters. The PMU is comprised of Shias, Sunnis, Turkmen, Kurds. We even have Kurds, Yazidis, and Christians. You're actually the Iraqis. Some speak of tribes and sects. This is in their minds, and they're speaking against us.
One year ago, the war against Daesh in Iraq and Syria was disappointing and hard. Concentrating on land and resources, Daesh had a dream in mind: the creation of an independent and autonomous country. Al-Hasaka, Deir ez-Zor, and Raqqa in Syria, and Al-Anbar, Nineveh, and Saladin in Iraq were the six provinces that had water, oil, and gas resources. Invisible hands had created the ground for the recognition of this new state by some neighboring countries. Though news from the fighting in Syria was not that satisfactory, the resistance front started its operations in Iraq. The PMU's important and frequent operations changed the game. The retaking of Jurf al-Sakhar, Beji and Salah-ud-Din triggered the domino-style defeats of Daesh. When the PMU fighters entered Tikrit, everybody rushed to Fallujah. The city was the head of a serpent called Daesh, and having or losing it could change the course of the war.
After the liberation of Samarra and Amerli that were besieged for 70 days, we retook Jorfal Sakhar as well. Then we came to cleanse the main headquarters of Daesh terrorists. Daesh wants to eliminate first Shias and then those Sunnis who do not support them. Then Christians, then Yazidis, etc. See the role of the US? The tensions are over now. You saw their main forces gather together to wage war against us as Daesh. Who do you think did this? Was that the idea of Abu Bakr al-Baghdadi or the CIA?
Mr. Mohandes, many thanks for joining us. First of all, we're going to start from the obvious question. Why Fallujah? Why now?
We saw that different international networks come to interview you, from French Le Monde to others. We saw that most of the foreign media asked questions about Iran and Haj Qasem, Soleimani's role in Iraq's development. Why do you think the media have focused on the role of Iran and Haj Qasem in particular?
This shows the success of Iran and Haj Qasem. The U.S. had some 200,000 soldiers in Iraq. They spent a lot of money and waged a huge war against Iraq, but received nothing. It's true that the U.S. has a role in Iraq, but not as much as Iran has inside Iraq. They're jealous of Iran's success and Iraq's victories. As you know, the U.S. has a theory and a plan to alienate Iraq from Iran. You saw that a few days ago. The Saudi foreign minister spoke against Iran's presence in Iraq.
Unbiased observers assess these victories, achieved with only 4,000 fallen soldiers, as a great accomplishment. But with Abu Mahdi as the commander, even one martyr is many.
The difference between Iran and the U.S. is that Iran is honest and is working with honesty. Iran really wants to eliminate Daesh, but the U.S. is not. It wants to manage the crisis. We are in close partnership with Iran. The Islamic Republic of Iran is helping the poor around the world, Sunnis, Shias, and minorities. We are proud of this. Why should we get annoyed?
Has it ever occurred to you to think enough is enough, that you should go enjoy your time?
No, I've never ever thought of it.
Why?
I'm okay with that. I've only traveled to war zones inside or outside Iraq. I hadn't seen Tikrit in my lifetime, but war made me go there, and I went there easily. I hadn't seen Fallujah. I've just discovered it. It's a very good area.
Have you felt tired?
Of what?
of war, of fighting.
No, like anybody who works and gets tired, I would be okay after a short rest.
You don't even rest. You work even at lunchtime.
Now I have to be like that. But it's not routine.
We interviewed Abu Mahdi till dawn. He never decides to sleep. Rather, he falls asleep with exhaustion. Now I understand what a martyr's widow once told me. Upon hearing news of her husband's martyrdom, she said now he can sleep as much as he wants.
Who do you love the most from among the Iranians?
The leader is not for the Iranians only.
Besides him?
Haj Qasem.
Why?
I don't know why. There are lots of reasons.
How is your relationship with him?
Like the relation of a soldier with his commander.
A soldier and Haj Qasem?
Yes, a soldier and Haj Qasem. It's an honor.
The commander of Iraq's PMU is proud of being Haj Qasem's soldier.
Yes, yes, his soldier. It's an honor and a gift from God.
Are you fighting for Iran or for Iraq?
I'm fighting for Iraq, for Iran, and for Islam. No problem. Iran is a sacred land. I'm not afraid. Our fighters were killed in Huwaizeh, in Operation Mersad, in Kermanshah. What for? I believe God gives life and He takes it away too. Not Daesh, not bullets, not anything else can bring us death. There's no fear. We all will die. There's a time stated for our death, and we die on that date. If we're martyred, that will be excellent.
It needs a huge amount of money to accommodate and feed the displaced. Artilleries have easily targeted civilians and then covered it up by saying it was a technical error. The U.S. has done it over and over in Iraq. But this is what differentiates Abu Mahdi from American generals. He visits camps in which people with familial links to Daesh have been accommodated.
Some of the families and children I saw today are Daesh relatives, but we should treat them humanely. We shouldn't tease a person because his or her father is a Daesh member. It's not religious, it's not humane. So one of my priorities in the PMU is to bring back the displaced families to their hometowns. This is our religious duty, and we shouldn't underestimate it.
Has it ever occurred to you to feel afraid of something?
Yes, I fear reporters. You.
Apart from us.
My wife.
How many children do you have? You didn't say that.
Should I say everything? I have four daughters. One of them has a PhD in international relations. Another has an MA in architecture. The other has an MA in chemistry, and the last one is still studying.
Abu Mahdi has been fighting for years, overtly and covertly. This is enough to portray a middle-aged guerrilla who is these days the pioneer in the fight against Takfiris. But Abu Mahdi is a real teacher. If there was no war, he would definitely be teaching at university, reviewing the formulas of development with his students. But duty is calling on him to take on a different job, Months of precise planning in the war room came to fruition, despite acts of sabotage by the U.S. Battalions from the resistance front managed to liberate Fallujah with the least casualties, thanks to the participation of all Shia and Sunni tribes. Fallujah was a nightmare for the Americans years ago.
Have you written any memoir?
I have some notes, but I haven't put them down as a memoir.
If you plan to write your memoir, what will you name the book?
Abu Mahdi.
Shall we name it the film Abu Mahdi as well?
Yes, I think.
Where would you like to be laid to rest if you got martyred?
I haven't talked about this with anyone except for one person, and I have asked him to contact my family in case I die or get martyred, and ask them about their favorite burial site. I prefer the Cemetery of the Martyrs because I like to be close to martyrs, and I believe it's a great opportunity for those who are buried near martyrs Muhammad Ali Rajai and Ayatollah Beheshti, two prominent Iranian politicians killed in terror attacks.
What will you do after the demise of Daesh?
I keep on fighting. It should go on till the end of my life. Jihad is a door God has opened only to its special servants. This is what Imam Ali says. It's a golden opportunity. I hope jihad would stay and I would remain to do it.
What would you like to say to the Iranians?
It was a blessing for them that they had Imam Khomeini. They're very lucky to have a leader like Ayatollah Khamenei. Hope God would give him longevity until Imam Mahdi comes back. An old iron bridge that Daesh exploded. We were engaged in fierce fighting with Daesh operatives. We put up a fierce resistance. Then we changed our plan. Instead of going from south to north, that is, instead of going from the Konkeri Bridge inside which we were stationed, we started to encircle the terrorists. We moved forward from east to west toward this bridge. Then we took control of Azraghiya. Thank God the area was completely liberated after we took this bridge and the next one. Daesh terrorists fled from Fallujah by swimming.
Insights into the Holy Quran.
Indeed, this Quran guides to what is most upright and gives the good news to the faithful who do righteous deeds, that there is a great reward for them.
In the name of Allah, the Compassionate, the Merciful, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio, Assalamu Alaikum. Welcome to another edition of the program, Insights into the Holy Quran, by Sayyid Muhammad Hassan Mudarrisi, a graduate of the Hawza Seminary of Qom. Please stay with us.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم الحمد لله رب العالمين ثم الصلاة والسلام على سيدنا محمد وآله الطاهرين In the name of Allah, the most beneficent, the most merciful. Hello everyone, dear brothers and sisters, I am Sayyid Muhammad Hassan letter C, and we're going to be with you with another edition of Insights into the Holy Quran. And in this edition of the program, we'll discuss the 22nd chapter of the Holy Quran, Suratul Hajj, or Pilgrimage. Before moving on, let's just listen to some verses of this chapter, and we'll be back with you. Stay with us.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم.
In the name of Allah, the entirely merciful, the especially merciful.
قل يا أيها الناس إنما أنا لكم نذير مبين.
Say, O people, I am only to you a clear warner.
فَالَّذِينَ آمَنُوا وَعَمِلُوا الصَّالِحَاتِ لَهُمْ مَغْفِرَةٌ وَرِزْقٌ كَرِيمٌ.
And those who have believed and done righteous deeds, for them is forgiveness and noble provision.
In this program, we are going to discuss the 49th and 50th verses of the chapter Al-Hajj. قُلْ يَا أَيُّهَا النَّاسِ إِنَّمَا أَنَا لَكُمْ نَذِيرٌ مُّبِينٌ فَالَّذِينَ آمَنُوا وَعَمِلُوا الصَّالِحَاتِ لَهُمْ مَغْفِرَةٌ وَرِزْقٌ كَرِيمٌ. Say, O people, I am only a plain warner unto you. Then those who believe and do righteous deeds, for them is forgiveness and an honorable sustenance. So the verse starts saying, قُلْ يَا أَيُّهَا النَّاسِ, say, O people. So the divine prophets and the infallibles do not say anything from their own accord, because the verse starts, say, قُلْ. And even this has been reflected in their words. Anyway, you may remember that in the previous verses, the words were about the haste of the pagans for the divine punishment. This matter is something which depends on the will of Allah, the Pure Essence, and even the prophets have no authority in it. In the 49th verse, it is an announcement that says, قُلْ يَا أَيُّهَا النَّاسِ إِنَّمَا أَنَا لَكُمْ نَذِيرٌ مُّبِينٌ. Say, O people, I am only a plain warner unto you. But this does not relate to the apostle, that his punishment may come to you soon or late when you disobey his commandment. No doubt, the Prophet ﷺ is both a warner and a bearer of glad tidings. But the emphasis on the subject of warning here in this verse and the absence of mentioning glad tidings might be because of the addressees of the verse under discussion. Those were some obstinate pagans, those who used to mock even the divine chastisements that were promised unto them. So the verse says, إِنَّمَا أَنَا لَكُمْ نَذِيرٌ مُّبِينٌ. At first it says, لَكُمْ. So this warning is for the people's good. The Prophet does not take any advantage from this being the warner. And furthermore, most of the time he didn't make the people to obey the laws, unless it made a chaos or disorder in the society. So he used warnings and advises instead of making them and pushing them.
We hope and pray that Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala blesses us with the ability to cover more of His divine
In this
word.
Series of programs, we will inshallah discuss the Holy Quran with a thematic approach.
We will inshallah discuss the chapter.
وتمثل القرآن في أخلاقه وفعاله فيه الفؤاد تعلقا وتلاه في جنح الدجى متدبرا.
The context in which Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala speaks in this verse is the context of mentioning the ills and problems and evils of the people of the book, the previous nations who have received revelation, and more particularly the Jew.
Now let's listen to some of the verses of the Holy Quran.
First, let's listen to a few verses.
Now let's listen to some verses of the Holy Quran.
Insights into the Holy Quran by Sayyid Muhammad Hassan Mudarrisi, a graduate of the Hausa Seminary of Qom.
So, the societies and communities, most of the time, are more in need of the warnings instead of the glad tidings. So, whenever we are from the authorities, we have to talk clearly to the people. Because it says, أَنَا لَكُمْ نَذِيرٌ مُبِينٌ, plain warner. So you all know me, it could be here to say, you all know me, but I am warning you, and I'm clearly talking to you. Through the next couple of verses, the Quran illustrates a feature from the subject of glad tidings and the concept of warning, since the all-embracing mercy of Allah always precedes His punishments. At first, it speaks of glad tidings. فَالَّذِينَ آمَنُوا وَعَمِلُوا الصَّالِحَاتِ لَهُمْ مَغْفِرَةٌ وَرِزْقٌ كَرِيمٌ. Then those who believe and do righteous deeds, for them is forgiveness and an honorable sustenance. Such people are washed and purified with the water of forgiveness, and then they find a relaxed mind and a calm conscience, and they will be included in kinds of graces and favors of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. Regarding the fact that the Arabic word kareem means very honorable, rizqun kareem, and worthy being, the phrase rizqun kareem means an honorable sustenance, and it has a very vast meaning which could encompass all the valuable blessings irrespective of spiritual and material. So the generous Lord in that generous world will bestow the kinds of generous blessings to His believing righteous servants. About the word karam, which is the main root of the word kareem, Raghib in his book Mufradat says, the Arabic word karam is usually applied for some good and worthy things that are very considerable. So the small good actions are not called karam and generosity. Thank you, dear listeners, for staying with us in this program as well. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Don't be saddened by what you see, by all the lies and treachery. Life is cruel, but don't worry. In your heart lies the key to unwind all the secrets. This life we see.
Thank you, dear listeners of IRIB English, for listening to us. If you have any question regarding our programs, feel free to email us at englishradio@irib.ir. Also, visit our website at parsetoday.com. Until the next program, take care and goodbye.
If you're interested to know about history, culture, family, politics, religion, art, etc., you wouldn't want to miss the chance to tune into the IRIB English Radio. Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
This is foresight. A program on how to worship Allah. Today's great tip: what are the blessings of the congregational prayers as regards to our ubudiyya, our servitude of Allah? Now, dear listeners, it is great to have you with us. We're talking about the blessings of the congregational prayers when it deals with our ubudiyya, our servitude of Allah. Now, dear friends, the religion of Islam has a significant social dimension. Unlike various other Abrahamic religions or other religions across the world, which focus on the individual aspect, Islam not only focuses on the individual aspect, but it also has a significant role in the social dimension of human society. And so, Islam has relied upon and emphasized this social dimension in many of its programs and ideological facts and concepts, especially through the blessed effects of unity, solidarity, and consistency. Now, the holding of the daily wajib prayers, the obligatory prayers in congregation, jama'ah, is one of these intellectual concepts and programs. So we find that one of the ways in which this social dimension has been emphasized and promoted is through congregational prayers. And what more beautiful, dear friends, than a group of Muslims, a society of Muslims coming together, congregating together, coming together as a single unity in solidarity, in consistency for the ubudiyya and the worship and servitude of Allah.
Dear listeners of the program Foresight, my name is Muhammad. Today, I'm going to read to you an excerpt from Munajatul Muridin, which means the whispered prayer of the devotees. In the name of Allah, the Beneficent, the Merciful. Glory be to you. How narrow are the paths for him whom you have not guided. How plain the truth for him whom you have guided on his way. My God, so make us travel on the roads that arrive at you, and set us into motion on the paths nearest to reaching you. Make near for us the far, and make easy for us the hard and difficult. Join us to your servants, those who hurry to you swiftly. Knock constantly at your door and worship you by night and by day, while they remain apprehensive in awe of you. You have purified their drinking places, taken them to the objects of their desire, granted their requests, accomplished their wishes through your bounty, filled their minds with your love, and quenched their thirst with your pure drink. Through you have they reached the pleasure of whispered prayer to you, and in you have they achieved their furthest goals. O he who comes toward those who come toward him, and grants gifts and bestows bounty upon them through tenderness, he is compassionate and clement toward those heedless of his remembrance, and loving and tender in drawing them to his door. فلا صبر ولا جلد ولا رمق بكم يحيى إذا زرتم وتفرح باللقى الحدق فإن غبتم فلا صبر ولا جلد ولا رمق وأنا العبد الفقير وأنا
Welcome back, dear listeners. It's an honor to have you with us in continuation to what we were saying, which was talking about the blessings of the congregational prayers in our Ubudiyah. We were saying how the congregational prayers show the social dimension of Ubudiyah. So the individual wajib obligatory prayers are the individual form, the individual manifestation of our Ubudiyah, our servitude of Allah. And the congregational prayers, the jama'at prayers, are the ones that are the manifestation of the social ubudiyah of humanity. And so in the traditions, we find that there are great rewards for congregational prayers, some of which, for example, are cited as follows in Wasa'il al-Shia, volume number 5, page 375, we find a narration which reports from the Messenger of Allah, the Holy Prophet Muhammad, the peace and blessings upon him and his holy household, where he says, "The prayer of one who hears the adhan, the call to prayer, but does not participate in the congregational prayer of Muslims for no justifiable reason at all, is worthless." Allahu Akbar. This, dear friends, is a very seemingly harsh or difficult or strict tradition coming from the Holy Prophet Muhammad, peace and blessings upon him. But we must remember that there is a great importance in the congregational prayers, in our ubudiyah, in our servitude to Allah. And there are many different reasons and wisdoms behind congregational prayers, and it is because of these great wisdoms, this hikmah of the congregational prayer, that it has been emphasized to such a great degree. And of course, we have been given the leeway. If there is a justifiable reason, then of course we do not need to attend the congregational prayer, as it is not wajib, obligatory. But that does not mean that we should do our very best to attend the congregational prayers, the jama'at prayers, as much as we can in order to enhance our ubudiyah.
IRIB English Radio.
Our website is parstoday.com.
Sorry, you know. رجائي بالرضا والخير أنير طريقي مع صديقي باحترام الغير
يا الله يا رحمن حقق أمانينا
And now we invite you to listen to Sheikh Osama Abdul Ghani.
What is faith? How do we judge, brothers and sisters, for true Islam, if we have iman even? What does God say in the Quran? Clear verse of Quran. Surah 8, verse number 1. What does God say? He says, وَعَطِيُوا اللَّهَ وَالرَّسُولَ Obey Allah and the Prophet. إِن كُنْتُمْ مُؤْمِنِينَ If you're a mu'min, if you believe, obey. Why is it in this verse that I shared with you that Allah mentions two sources? He says, وَعَطِيُوا اللَّهَ وَرَسُولَ Why does God say, obey Allah and the Prophet? Why not just say, obey Allah? Don't you believe the Prophet's ma'asum? Yes, you believe the Prophet's ma'asum. So is the Prophet going to say anything that's different than Allah? He's going to say the same thing. Why mention both? Just say it's enough. Obey Allah. This, brothers and sisters, is a sensitive point. It separates true Islam from fake Islam. Why does God mention both? Brothers and sisters, how do you and I determine that we're obeying Allah? A lot of people can make claims about obeying Allah. I'm obeying Allah. You're obeying Allah. Everybody says they're obeying Allah. How can you and I make a difference when we know that we're obeying Allah? You have to obey Allah's representative. You have to obey Allah's representative. Who is the wali of Allah? The wali of God. In true Islam, brothers and sisters, not secular Islam, not fake Islam. In true Islam, you and I don't have a choice when it comes to obedience of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. The verse is clear. وَعَطِيُوا اللَّهَ Obey Allah وَرَسُولَهُ And obey His messenger. إِن كُنْتُمْ مُؤْمِنِينَ If you're a believer, obey.
يا مقلب القلوب ثبت قلبي على دينك يا مقلب القلوب ثبت قلبي
Welcome back, dear friends. Thanks for staying with us. This is Foresight on IRIB English Radio. So we've been talking about the importance and the blessings of congregational prayers, jama'at prayers, prayers that are conducted in unity, solidarity, and consistency with a group of followers together simultaneously, and how this congregational prayer enhances and strengthens our ubudiyyah. We talked about the importance of the congregational prayer in the words of the Messenger of Allah and how that Islam has a very significant social dimension which is manifested in one of its ways in the congregational prayers. Now we find again another tradition that in Man La Yadhurul Faqih, volume number 1, page 377, that disparaging the congregational prayers is tantamount to disparaging Allah. Again, a very serious, a very seemingly strict tradition. And this, of course, is for people where congregational prayers are readily available. They are, for example, next door, and people decide not to go. They leave the masjid and the mosques empty. Now there's another tradition in Mustadrak al-Wasail, volume number 1, page 488, where it says that constant participation in congregational prayers saves a person from becoming a munafiq, a hypocrite. So again, connecting this to our ubudiyyah, our servitude of Allah, surely we realize how important congregational prayers are when it comes to our servitude of Allah. And in Kanzul Ummal, volume number 8, hadith tradition number 22,815, we find a tradition where it says, and there are rewards for every step taken towards congregational prayers and the mosque. Very beautiful secrets and blessings in the congregational prayers as related to our ubudiyya, our servitude of Allah. Thank you very much, dear listeners, for listening to this episode of Foresight. Don't forget to visit our website at parstoday.com. Until another episode and another great tip, fi amanillah, and God bless you all.
Aperture.
At the height of the Cold War, the CIA launches a highly classified, top secret research program into the covert use of biological and chemical agents. In simulated attacks on enemy populations, entire cities throughout America are contaminated with bacteria, exposing millions of Americans to germ warfare. But the real focus of the research is on mastering the art of mind control. I'm Daniel Arya, and this is Aperture. LSD had become one of the CIA's key interests for its brain warfare program. As the agency theorized, it could be useful in interrogations. Mind control experiments generally centered around behavior modification via electroshock therapy, hypnosis, polygraphs, radiation, and a variety of drugs, toxins, and chemicals. Now, these experiments relied on a range of test subjects, some who freely volunteered, some who volunteered under coercion, and some who had absolutely no idea that they're involved in a sweeping defense research program. And what was the extent of these brainwashing experiments? How did the CIA use unconsenting people as guinea pigs in thousands of different experiments? Join us on Aperture for your answers on CIA covert experiments.
August 16, 1951. Madness spreads through the village of Pont-Saint-Esprit in the Gard region in France. Dozens of villagers have been victim of these bouts of madness. The press describes men terrorized by snakes swirling in their stomachs. A doctor recounts the evening of the 25th of August, where dozens of locals were seized by convulsions, like in a night of the apocalypse. Reports from the victims are terrifying.